Welcome to the CAMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have a story on Blue Lake Rancheria's work on essential infrastructure and economic development. But first, some local updates and alerts. This is CAMUD News. Starting with news in Arcata. Removal of debris at the site of the downtown fire is expected to begin on Monday, July 27th. Working closely with the property owners of the affected sites, the City of Arcata has contracted with Environmental Remedies LLC for the demolition and removal of debris remaining from the downtown fire that occurred in January of this year. The city has been working closely with the property owners to identify a qualified contractor to complete the site cleanup and to help streamline the permitting process with the various regulatory agencies involved in the project. Following the successful completion of several permits required for this work, the demolition and removal project can now begin. The cleanup effort is particularly complex because the damaged structures and debris crossed multiple property lines during the fire event. As a result, all affected properties must be cleaned and managed together as a single coordinated project. The city appreciates the cooperation and diligence of the property owners who have worked collaboratively to move the project forward and complete the cleanup effort as one unified project. Cleanup operations will involve the removal of fire damaged materials and debris from the site and loading it onto trucks for disposal out of the area. When construction begins, community members should expect intermittent traffic disruptions in the downtown area during the work to accommodate truck loading, hauling activities, and construction equipment operations. Traffic control measures will be implemented to help maintain public safety and minimize impacts whenever possible. The city appreciates the patience and cooperation of the community, property owners, and partner agencies as this work moves forward. Additional updates will be provided as more information becomes available. For immediate questions, please contact the City Manager's Office at 707-822-5953. Also from the City of Arcata. The steel water line replacement project is continuing in Arcata and will require intermittent closures on 7th Street beginning Tuesday, July 28th. Mikolo Construction Incorporated has made significant progress on the City of Arcata steel waterline replacement project, and work is wrapping up in Central Arcata. The city recognizes that road closures and detours affect day-to-day life, businesses, and livelihoods of community members, and is committed to minimizing disruptions and providing as much notice as possible for citizens to adjust their routes. These disruptions are necessary to facilitate the replacement of the city's aging water infrastructure, particularly targeting remaining sections of steel water lines. Past city engineering records show steel water lines failing, with replacement efforts starting in the 1960s, and that the water lines are now far beyond their service life. Leakage losses and catastrophic failures from aging water infrastructure are ongoing costs to the city's taxpayers and can cause unforeseen budget impacts. When emergency patch repairs are made, the sections that fail cannot be fully replaced. Leaks and failures in the system can also affect first responders' capability to protect residents and property in a fire event. Water valve installation at the intersection of 7th Street and F Street will require a closure the evening of Tuesday, July 28th through Friday, July 31st. Though the intersection will be closed, 7th and F Streets will remain open to local traffic. Detours will be posted as well, along with road closure signage, and detours suggested are at 7th and A Street and 7th and Union Streets. It is required to obey traffic signage and flaggers. Please drive slowly and respectfully to ensure the safety of the work area if accessing businesses, and plan to adjust routes as necessary. From the Six Rivers National Forest. The Six Rivers National Forest is proud to announce James Short as the 2025 Firefighter of the Year and recipient of the Dale A. Mendez Award. Throughout the 2025 fire season, Short consistently embodied the high professional standards that define Dale Mendez's career: hard work, leadership, integrity, and a relentless commitment to the mission. James Short is currently a fire engine operator on Engine 341, based at the Mad River Ranger District. He began his career with the U.S. Forest Service in 2023 when he was hired as a permanent seasonal firefighter, and over the course of 3 years, due to his impressive work ethic and drive, has successfully worked his way up to FEO. Short is quick to take initiative and lead out on a mission. Critical tasks such as extended shifts, crew oversight, and tactical decision-making without hesitation. Over the years, due to staffing challenges in these remote areas, Short consistently volunteered to take on additional responsibilities and duties in service of the mission. This leadership and strong work ethic has been essential in maintaining operational readiness, especially during peak fire activity. He leads with fairness and respect, encouraging others constructively and offering solutions to improve module efficiency while mentoring newer firefighters. Short's integrity is reflected in his strong sense of self-awareness, his ongoing commitment to self-improvement, and his consistent accountability for his actions. This mindset drives him to prioritize safety, contribute not only to his immediate crew, but to everyone around him. On the fire line, he demonstrates sound decision-making, prompt action, and a proactive approach to safety in all aspects of the job. A standout example of his courageous efforts and tactical excellence occurred during the Cobb Fire in 2025. When the fire made a dangerous run toward a threatened structure, Short recognized the immediate risk and took aggressive, decisive action. Working in extreme conditions of heat and smoke, he cut off the fire by quickly establishing a solid anchor point and constructing a direct fire line with just himself and two other firefighters. He grabbed a chainsaw and all the hose they could carry, cutting through thick brush and a steep drainage. This bold maneuver halted the fire's forward progress, successfully protecting the structure, preventing further spread into residential areas. His swift, skilled intervention saved valuable property and demonstrated the highest level of initiative, sound decision-making, and commitment to protecting lives and resources. In addition to his hard work and dedication to the U.S. Forest Service, James is also a member of the Southern Trinity Volunteer Fire Department, responding to all forms of emergencies throughout the local community. From the Mendocino District Attorney, two Ukiah men who were scheduled to have their preliminary hearing in Mendocino County Superior Court instead both admitted criminal liability for a series of drug, gun, and money crimes. Defendant Jevin James Marino, age 19, was granted permission to withdraw his not guilty pleas, and instead, he entered a no-contest plea to the following crimes: unlawful distribution of assault weapons, a felony; unlawful money laundering, a felony; unlawful possession of cocaine for sale, a felony; and unlawful possession of cannabis for sale, a misdemeanor. Defendant Adrian Theodoro Manriquez, also known as Adrian Reyes, age 20, was also granted permission to withdraw his not guilty pleas, and instead, he too entered no contest pleas to the following crimes: unlawful distribution of assault weapons, a felony; unlawful money laundering, a felony; unlawful possession of cocaine for sale, a felony; unlawful possession of cannabis for sale, a misdemeanor; unlawful possession of an assault weapon, a felony; and unlawful possession of a machine gun, a felony. Under California law, there's generally no practical difference between a plea of guilty and a plea of no contest when felony charges are involved. Both pleas result in a conviction, allow the court to impose sentence, and carry all the same criminal consequences. The principal distinction is that a no-contest plea is not an express admission of guilt and generally may not be used against the defendant as an admission if there were a civil lawsuit based on the same conduct. For purposes of the criminal case, however, a no-contest plea is treated the same as a guilty plea. Due to their ages and lack of prior criminal record, the prosecutor offered a no-prison-at-the-outset promise to both defendants, which each accepted, meaning each will be placed on a maximum 2 years of supervised probation, and both are facing up to 360 days in the county jail, along with individually tailored terms and conditions of supervised probation yet to be determined. Both defendants agreed to forfeiture of assets seized during the law enforcement investigation, including a Chevy Corvette, a BMW 330, a Chevy Colorado truck, a Toyota pickup truck, and almost $16,000 in U.S. currency. At the conclusion of this morning's court proceedings, each defendant was referred to the Mendocino County Adult Probation Department for a background investigation and sentencing recommendation. Each was ordered back in court for sentencing on August 26 at 1:30 p.m. in Department E in the Ukiah Courthouse. The law enforcement agencies that investigated and developed the evidence underlying today's convictions were the Mendocino Major Crimes Task Force, the California Highway Patrol, the Ukiah Police Department, and the DA's own Bureau of Investigations. The attorney handling the prosecution against these defendants is District Attorney David Eister. Mendocino County Superior Court Judge Ann Moorman approved the proposed disposition and accepted the defendant's change of pleas this morning. Judge Moorman will be the sentencing judge on August 26, when the case will be called before the bench. From the Fort Bragg Police Department. On July 23rd, at approximately 19:47 hours, officers were dispatched to the 100 block of Cypress Street for a report of a traffic collision involving a pedestrian. Upon arrival on scene, officers located an unresponsive 67-year-old female lying in the roadway. Officers immediately began CPR until medical and fire arrived on scene. The female adult was later declared deceased at the scene. The preliminary investigation revealed the following. A 2021 GMC Sierra operated by an adult male driver was traveling westbound on Cypress Street before the collision occurred in the 100 block of Cypress Street. The driver remained on scene and cooperated with the investigation. This incident is Fort Bragg's first fatal collision and only traffic death of 2026. And next, our main stories. This is KMOD News. The Blue Lake Rancheria's work on essential infrastructure and economic development were described in an online update. Daniel Mintz reports.
The Blue Lake Rancheria Tribe's advances in energy, water, and disaster preparedness were outlined in a July 22nd presentation to the Community Economic Resilience Consortium. David Narum, the Rancheria's Resilience Director, said a core principle guiding the tribe's work is community preparedness regarding essentials like energy and water. Nationally recognized for its energy infrastructure development, the Rancheria built its solar-powered microgrid in 2017 in collaboration with the Schatz Energy Research Center at Cal Poly Humboldt. Narum talked about the power system being islandable, with the ability to work independently from the PG&E macrogrid to serve the Rancheria's essential power needs in emergencies. The microgrid development provides more than just power, as explained here by Narum.
We've run solar career training programs. This one noted here in the box on the left was a program we ran with Grid Alternatives. It's a company that basically provides solar training. It was a DOE-funded program, and it was for Western U.S., basically. It was a very broad program training Native Americans on reservations in solar installation basics and so to build individual skill capacity and tribal development capacity. Blue Lake has a pre-apprenticeship program for low voltage electricians, part of our workforce development package here.
The Rancheria is part of the Tribal Energy Resilience and Sovereignty Project, promoting regional clean energy development and interconnectedness among the Hoopa, Yurok, and Kuruk tribes. The project got $88 million in federal funding, but NARAM said that's been withdrawn with the change in national leadership. But state funding might emerge. The tribe also has advanced work on water resiliency, developing a smart water grid whose elements are described here by NARAM.
We have a well that was funded under the ERA, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, many years ago, 2014, I think. So we've developed a water treatment system and a storage tank, which you can see there. And then in front of that, you have some inverters and battery storage that help also run the smart water grid, connect to the main microgrid here at the Rancheria. It provides us not just tapping into our independent power supply, but now we have our independent water supply.
The tribe also operates a resiliency training and innovation center, a health clinic, and a dual greenhouse garden with a related teaching kitchen. The tribe also has a health clinic, and in planning stages are a community resilience center and development of a regenerative tourism and outdoor hospitality program. On the economic front, the Blue Lake Rancheria Economic Development Corporation advances what Sierra Emery, its executive director, described as, quote, efforts that don't compromise the tribe's sovereignty, but in fact enhance it through increased economic activity. The corporation's business activities are carried out through its subsidiaries, which are described here by Emery.
Basically, the corporation is a holder of multiple LLC subsidiaries. We right now are really splitting that into three areas of focus. The first being Blue Lake Tribal Manufacturing, which is the light wood product manufacturing that David alluded to in his presentation. And I'll get into the specifics of these subsidiaries. The second one is Blue Lake Tribal Energy, which is a microgrid development and consulting business. I'm sure you all know that we get lots of incoming at the Rancheria from different tribes, cities, municipalities looking for advice and support on microgrid development. And we do have some Redwood Region Rise funding that is helping us incubate that into a standalone business. And then just next week, we're going to be forming what's called Blue Lake Tribal Restoration, which is really going to be combining the tribe's land back and its ancestral land return program on the government side with the work they're doing in native plant nursery, all of the restoration activities that's going to have to go on in tribal land as these lands are reclaimed. This entity will be a service to Blue Lake Rancheria and also other tribes in the region and other nonprofits doing restoration work.
Last January, the tribe acquired Woodlab Designs in Arcata, and it will soon make what Emery described as end-user products from wood reclaimed from restored ancestral lands. Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, the meeting's host, noted that the tribe's work includes, quote, teaching other communities and other organizations how to collaborate and work with other folks. He added, quote, and I think that's really going to be the key here, probably more now than ever, because we don't have either of our big traditional industries throwing off cash right now. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Post office rallies planned for National Day of Action. Suzanne Potter reports.
Tomorrow, more than a dozen rallies are planned at post offices in California and across the nation. Members of the American Postal Workers Union are holding a Support Your Public Post Office Day of Action. The union encourages people to flood Washington, D.C. with postcards asking lawmakers to fully fund the agency. Sarah Wilson, president of APWU Area Local 960 in Reading, says change happens when ordinary people stand together.
If we don't fight for our postal service, someone else will decide its future for us. If we're not willing to stand up now, we can't be surprised when more jobs disappear, services get cut more, and post offices become a loss.
The union calls on Congress to raise the debt ceiling and revise calculations on retirement contributions for postal workers. Union leaders reject the notion that the Postal Service is a business that should make a profit. Instead, they assert that the agency provides an essential service, delivery to every address, no matter how remote. Saying it amounts to cheating, President Donald Trump has long been a critic of mail-in voting. But APWU National President Jonathan Smith says those verbal attacks are misguided and says vote by mail is safe and remains an important revenue source for the Postal Service.
But a lot of people want to give the false narrative that vote by mail is not safe, that vote by mail is corrupt, when it is not. You have a better chance of getting struck by lightning than your ballot being corrupted by vote by mail.
Four of President Trump's nominees to the Postal Service Board of Governors are awaiting confirmation in the Senate. The union demands that those nominees reject plans for privatization or large-scale cuts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
And next, your National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. California is moving forward with what could become the second largest tribal land return in state history. The California State Water Resources Control Board has approved $25 million in financing to help the Quartz Valley Indian Reservation acquire nearly 40,000 acres of the Scott River headwaters in Northern California's Klamath River Basin. The acquisition would return ancestral lands that include salmon-bearing streams, cultural sites, forests, and critical drinking water resources to tribal stewardship. Quartz Valley Indian Reservation Chairman Leonard Lincoln says the project marks a truly historic moment for the tribe. He says, for a tribe that was once terminated and subsequently confined to just 2,000 acres, reclaiming nearly 40,000 acres of our ancestral territory is a monumental victory that secures our sovereignty and our people's future. The acquisition is being supported by Trust for Public Land and the current landowner, EFM Investments and Advisory. Trust for Public Land says returning the land to tribal stewardship will help protect clean water, restore salmon habitat, improve forest health, and strengthen climate resilience throughout the Klamath River Basin while expanding opportunities for cultural access, ecological restoration, and conservation jobs. The Trump administration is considering a complete or partial reversal of a 20-year federal mineral ban on new oil and gas leasing that protects New Mexico's Greater Chaco region, and time for public comment is running out. Ross Brown explains.
The Trump administration is considering a complete or partial reversal of a 20-year federal mineral ban on new oil and gas leasing that protects New Mexico's Greater Chaco region, and time for public comment is running out. The Department of the Interior says revoking protections on a landscape that holds cultural importance for indigenous people could boost oil production by more than 2 million barrels over the next 20 years. The New Mexico Wildlife Federation's Jesse Dubell says despite the importance of oil and gas to New Mexicans' livelihood and the state's economy, some things are priceless.
It's really important to understand that there are some places where it is absolutely inappropriate to risk destruction of sacred sites for the idea that there might be some amount of oil and gas underneath that mineral estate.
The administration is looking at three options. Keep a current 10-mile buffer in place, cut it to 5 miles, or revoke it entirely, which could destroy artifacts and architecture. It argues maximizing fossil fuel production through increased drilling could lower utility and fuel costs and bolster national security. The public has until this Wednesday to comment online through the Bureau of Land Management's NEPA webpage. The Federation's Andrew Black, a public lands field director in New Mexico, says there's a good reason Chaco is designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site, one of only 24 such sites in the U.S.
19th to 13th century complex Pueblo cultural settlements with multi-story houses, sacred sites. The architecture is truly unbelievable. Just from that perspective alone, it is remarkable.
Last week, the New Mexico congressional delegation called on Interior Secretary Doug Burgum to extend the public comment period to 90 days, conduct tribal consultation, and allow extensive public engagement before making a decision. Black says it's the least that should be done.
After various archaeological surveys and studies, that area was determined to have the greatest amount of cultural resources within it. More study and more examination and more analysis needed to be done within that buffer zone.
The buffer zone is home to bobcats, pronghorn, elk and deer, coyotes, bald eagles, small mammals, and various reptiles. New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich calls on the Interior Department to reconsider its oil and gas proposal and honor the public land order approved by the Biden administration in 2023. This is Roz Brown.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? Then give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Rogue Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory, the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.